Factice Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Sophia George in Girly Girly. I thought she was talking about a curly whirly there, but there you go. It's 18 minutes after 12. It's lunchtime, and we've got a special guest in the studio. It's been ages since you come in, Danny Stimson.
Over a year, I think.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Or should I call you Daniel P. Stimson?
No, just Danny. No.
Well, that's what's on the book.
Yeah, that's my professional author's name, isn't it? Like,
can we ask what the P
stands J.K. for? Rowling.
Can we ask what the P stands for?
No, you can't.
Oh, right. So you don't actually go into the detail in your book.
It's my middle name. It stands for my middle name.
And it's not a normal name, then, by all accounts?
No, it's if my wife is listening to this, she will be giggling. My middle name has been something of a bane in my life. And that's why I used the initial on the book, because it's actually... I don't actually go into that part in the book at all, but it's my middle name is Perrott.
Oh, right.
And I used to get teased quite a lot for the fact that when you spoke at school, what's your middle name? And most kids were Andrew, John, yeah. David, Stephen, you know.
P for Peter.
Peter, that sort of thing. And then I said Perrott, and there was normally a palpable pause, and then... huge amount of laughing. So yeah, my middle name is Perrott, but it has quite a lot of family history. I'm directly related to Henry VIII.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah. So, and I have a castle in Pembrokeshire.
Okay. How many wives?
Seven or eight. Most of them deceased.
We won't go into that.
That's right. I don't like to talk about it.
All right. So Danny, you're back. You got a book.
Yes.
And it's called
Sink or Swim.
And we've just been having a conversation for about 25 minutes or so, and I've just realised how much we've got in common for many different reasons.
Yeah, we do. We have so much in common. It's quite spooky, isn't it? I mean, I always enjoy coming in and talking to you because we've become friends over the years that I've came in before COVID and stuff. And, yeah, it's just each time we have a conversation, we realise we've got so much, paralleled in our lives, you know. Quite spooky.
So let's talk, a sink or swim.
Yes.
Just talk us through the, you know, what it is.
Because
it's not. And can I just ask you, while I remember?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've got old and I forget things.
Yeah.
On the back of the book, there's a whole, like, paragraph of what the book is.
Yeah.
And then you make a point of saying it's not a book about dyslexia.
No.
Because I'm one, and you spelt one, you know this, obviously. I'm not picking you up on it, but
it's my little joke.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad, because I chuckled, but then I thought, should I?
Yes. Yeah, no, dyslexia is one of those things which has been both sword and shield in my life. I use it to protect myself. Now, as I'm an adult and I'm in situations where I might be doing presentations to, you know, large numbers of people for my business and my work and stuff, if there's spelling mistakes on the PowerPoint presentation, I actually make a joke of it and say, look, there will be spelling mistakes. If you spot them, please let me know. And I've done them on purpose to make sure that you're actually listening. But there's a fair chance I don't actually know there's a spelling mistake in there at all, because I make them all the time. But now I make no apology for it, whereas when I was young, it was something which was really quite tough to deal with, being dyslexic. So I basically taught myself to read and write. I have my own handwriting system. One secretary at a business I used to work for called it Danish. So I have my own way of writing. It's called Danish.
Danish.
And you have to be fluent in Danish to understand any of my reports I wrote out. So so thanks, Sue, if you're listening. And now I kind of, it's one of my strengths. My dyslexia is one of my strengths. I see the world in a different way. My brain functions differently. And it has more positives than negatives in my view. And I think if I could, as I put in the book, if I go back and speak to the 8-year-old Daniel that got told that he had this thing called dyslexia, I'd kind of tell him that it was a bit of a superpower. You can actually use it to your advantage, because you see the world differently, it puts you at an advantage. But you just need to know how to use, you know, the power that you have.
Definitely. Yeah. Just talk us through the premise. I'm just going to go over there and shut the door, because I know there's going to be a load of noise in a minute.
Okay.
Okay, but you keep talking.
I'll keep talking.
Just talk us through the premise of the book. And if I'm not back by then, I'm only going to go 6 feet, but you tell us how you can get hold of your book, all right?
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so The book is called Sink or Swim, and subtitled Not a Self-Help Book, because I have a strong view on self-help, that if you're actually buying a book in the self-help genre, you're not actually self-helping yourself, you're actually asking for help. The book is definitely a help book, but it's not a self-help book. This is how I deal with systems in my life to achieve things. If I want to get from A to B, this is what I do. This is how I do it. This is the process that I go through. And the book is set out into sort of three main sections. First of all, it's me, my brain, and my upbringing and how I function as a human being. I kind of function a little bit different to most people, but however, a lot of people might actually read it and say, actually, you know, you're exactly the same as everybody else. But that's just the way that I see myself. So I put how I deal with life into context and my upbringing. The middle section is a parable story with two main characters, a sort of a mentor and a student, a reluctant student and a reluctant mentor, and the mentor kind of guides the student onto how he can move the needle of his life, change the direction of his life, take control of his decisions, and put himself in moving towards what he actually wants to do and be in life, rather than just the same mundane life which is causing him misery. So it's a story to kind of show how the system works with anecdotes and storytelling. And then the third section is the actual system itself, how you actually apply it, how I apply it, and putting the 14 points into context with regard to practical ways of changing what you do, how you do it, to improve, you know, this funny puzzle we call life.
Now, I mean, I don't ask directly how old you are, but could you have written this 10 years ago?
No.
So this has come at the perfect time.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, a whole lot of experience and so on.
Yes. Yeah.
So the
main reason I couldn't have written it 10 years ago was that when I did my Get Fit for 50 campaign, I applied my system, but it wasn't really a... it wasn't a written bullet point of things that I do. It's just how I knew to go through, to work through the elements that I need to actually put in place the change that I needed to make to go from a very unfit 48-year-old to a reasonably healthy and fit and a different body-shaped 50-year-old. That was my sort of desire at that time, to look better, on the beach. And then from that point, then I got very, very into things like nutrition and diet. And then I started a little kind of like the Fit Mindset Co., which is where we got introduced, where I tried to help people with their health and fitness. And then a mate of mine in the gym said, you know, I explained the system that I kind of apply to the processes that I go through. And he said, well, you should write it down. And at that point, I was going through the training for my men's physique competition. So I wasn't in a position to actually put any time to it. But I thought, well, at some stage, I'm going to sit down and actually start writing the book. But I had no idea how to actually put what was effectively 14 bullet points into a 40,000 word book that might be actually interesting for people to read. But after the men's physique competition, I had a kind of a little bit of a nugget of an idea, which I then just started to expand on. And then when COVID hit, I thought, well, that's the perfect time for me to actually use the time that got available, because work was probably 50% of what it would have been. I was still working at the time for my normal business, my surveying business, but I didn't have as much work as I would normally. So I used that time every single day when I was in my office writing my reports. I would then set down a time at the end of the day to just put some words down, either write them down on paper, put them on the whiteboard, type them up on my computer, and then just file them away. Just keep on putting stuff down every single day. And then after 3 months, I then took them all out, took the scraps of paper out, took the photocopies or the pictures I took on my whiteboard when I wrote ideas down, and then just put them into some sort of semblance of an idea and a pathway to actually put them to become a book. And then slowly over the year, it took shape. So that was 2021. Then I gave myself 2022, once it was actually written fully, and I had the full manuscript at the end of 21 to get it published. So I found myself a publisher, went through an editing process, had to employ the help of a friend of mine to actually edit the book and do a a sort of read through with regard to spelling and grammar, and because my grammar is terrible, because I taught myself to read and write, so I just have no idea about grammar. I don't know what, you know, I call them flying commas, and I don't even know what they are, you know, apostrophes and those sort of things, and commas and all that sort of rubbish. I had no idea how to use that. So so she went through the whole book and sort of grammarized it, and then did a basic spell check, and then my wife has done the same just to make sure there was a second pair of eyes going over it, which is was finished a few weeks ago. The publishers have done obviously a front cover for me, so which I'm really pleased with. So I absolutely love the front cover. I think it's really sort of it hits you straight away, I think, the imagery on it. And then the final draft gets approved tomorrow. They're going to send it to me tomorrow and I get to approve it. And if everything's good, in about 15 days, the book will be available on Amazon.
Fantastic. How wonderful was that?
And it is quite cool, isn't it? I'm actually, you know, self-pride is one of those things you have to be careful of, but I am quite actually proud of myself. You know, I set myself the task and I've achieved it.
Do you feel like, was that something that was niggling near that you wanted to do, needed to do? No. If you hadn't have done it, would you have thought, well, it don't matter?
No, it was really just, it was literally just the kind of the acorn of an idea that a friend of mine gave me that I should write it down because it might help some people. But then I had no idea how to actually, the vehicle for the 14-point system. And then slowly that idea built, and I love the process of things. You know, I'm one of those people that I have an idea and then I set in place the process to actually achieve the idea that I've had, whether it's the bodybuilding, the Get Fit for 50, the writing the book, changing my career, whatever it might be, you know, having a stone workshop down at Chessel teaching people. When I got that, you know, had that idea, I put that into my, I do all these things, I love the process, because when I get to the end of them, when I've done them, then I go, okay, what's next? You know, I get to the top of the mountain, I have a little look and I go, oh, there's another mountain over there, let's go and have a go at that one.
Yeah, you know, I bet your wife panics then, don't she?
Oh, yeah, she does. That's right, yeah. Yeah, whenever I finish something, you can see she gets slightly nervous, like, where's the next one going? Yeah, so, but that's how I function as a human being. I'm a naturally driven individual. I'm naturally disciplined when it comes to doing the things I want to do. And I'm relentless. And I don't stop until they're done. So, and dyslexia and not being very good at reading and writing. I mean, the worst thing, I put it in the book, the worst thing that a dyslexic could do is actually write a book. That's the worst thing you could do, because you're putting yourself up in front of everybody to be criticised for your ability to actually do, you know, a relatively straightforward thing for most people, which is read and write. So
who'd have thought it? I mean, you know, they were, you know, dyslexic and probably thought, well, I'll never be able to write a book.
No, it's the last thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
If you'd talked to me when I was sort of, you know, maybe 18 or 19, I got so many issues over, you know, my upbringing and my school life, which is a big part of who I am and how I function. But the issues that being dyslexic, you know, and my school life caused was terrible. I literally, when we first got married, I wouldn't write checks, you know, good old-fashioned checks. Your younger audience won't know what a check is, but it's a piece of paper you used to write down a number on and then give it to someone and they could go and take it to a bank.
Oh, right.
But I wouldn't write a check. I wouldn't write I wouldn't write the numbers down. I wouldn't write, you know, she used to write the checks for me, you know.
Oh, she just thought you were tight, I bet. But
probably,
you
know, yeah.
You write the checks.
Because I hated putting anything down on paper where I could be then, you know, criticised. You know, if I couldn't spell the word, you know, 1,000 or 100 or 8, you know, which is, you know, quite realistic. You know, spelling the word 8 is actually quite difficult for me, because it's I struggle with orientation of vowels in words is what I struggle with most.
Okay.
So I will spell everything roughly right, but it'll be all the vowels will be wrong. The I, O, U and A's and stuff will all be in the wrong order.
So how long was it before, what age were you when you suddenly sort of thought, right, I'd better start writing some checks then? Otherwise they're going to take the house away.
Yeah, well, I think probably, I would say probably about year 2001, when
crikey
2001 when I started to work for an architectural firm called ERMC, and then suddenly I had to actually change the way that I operated. So I had to actually then start writing. I had to do reports, and because I went from being in the building industry as kind of, you know, stonemason to actually being a professional. I wanted to be a professional. So, you know, I wanted to get my qualifications as a QS and a project manager, which I then went to Reading University Night School. Married two kids in the early 2000s, wife working nights, and then did over 4 years, I did a two-year degree. Basically, I did, you know, assignments every single month for 2.5 years for that bit, and then my RICS membership. So I had to be forced to actually write things down and be up for being criticised. I do have quite an, as an aside, I don't put this one in the book, but my dyslexia actually got me top marks in my the dissertation for my RICS and my qualification to become a quantity surveyor. There was a legal section to it for contracts and the law at Reading, and I read the question wrong, and I got an A. I got called out in the class when we had to go up to Reading to do a face to face, and I actually read the question wrong. I read the word. It was basically the question was show the defences on this case, and I read it as differences. So I wrote my whole dissertation on the differences between two cases, and not the defences, because I read the word wrong. And I got called up to say that I'd actually shown that I had a very strong legal mind, because I thought outside the box compared to everybody else, that I actually looked at it from a very different way. And I got like an A+ on it. But I had to admit to the person sat next to me in the auditorium in Reading that I actually read the question wrong. So.
And what happened then? They'll give you a D instead.
That's right, yeah. But yeah, get top marks for being dyslexic. That's what I got. So,
wow. Yeah. It sounds like you've overcome so much in that respect then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, like I say, I use it as a superpower now, so it's one of my defences.
Do you know what? I've heard that expression before from a youngster that has autism.
Yeah.
And it was in our TV documentary that the BBC ran.
Yeah.
And it was a young lady called Ophelia. When she was on camera, she said, I use the, you know, the autism as my superpower.
Yeah.
And why not? It's a great expression.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah.
And you've done exactly the same and written a book.
Yeah.
That is, we haven't seen it yet, but we've seen the back cover, and we've spotted one spelling mistake. But you point that out.
I did that one. That was on purpose. Yeah, there may be others. I don't know. But you've got to look at it at some. You may not be responsible for everything that happens to your life. You are responsible for your decision making, but you're also responsible for your reaction to what happens to you. And that young lady, her reaction to her autism is a positive one. The reaction to my dyslexia is a positive one. You can also react negatively, and you can complain and blame everybody else for the situation. You might not be responsible for the actual situation that's occurred, but you are responsible for your response to it.
Well, you talk about responses that you're responsible for, and you make a point, because it's quite a big, there's a powerful paragraph on the back that says you're where you are basically because you've made these decisions.
You are exactly where you're meant to be.
And only you can change it, basically.
Correct. Yeah.
But do you need to change your mindset?
You do. Yeah. Yeah. You mindset is absolute key to taking you from where you are to where you want to be. Because if you have the same mindset, if you have a fixed mindset and you want to do exactly the same thing over and over again and expect some change from that, then you're going to be disappointed. If you want to be somewhere else, you have to do. If you want change, you have to change. If you keep on doing the same thing, you'll always get what you've always got. All those old adages are absolutely true. Mm. You know, if you want to get what somebody else hasn't got, you've got to be able to do what they're not prepared to do. So, you know, you have to. You know, the one thing you have to change is how you, one, see yourself, and two, see the situation. And your mindset is key to that. So,
now look. You said something out there in the green room, and I told you how I'm feeling at the moment.
Yep.
I don't want to go into massive detail, but this is, I'm 57 years of age, and my accountant said you ought to start thinking about your retirement. And I hadn't done until he said that. Yeah. And then I thought, crikey, it's only 10 years away.
Yeah.
And then you start looking at the time you've got left. And I'm a great believer in looking at the time. I've always said, oh, if I live till I'm 77, I've got 20 years. Okay, but let's look at the, you know, that might be shorter than that. But hey, look, I can retire when I'm 67, fingers crossed. Mm. What are you going to do in that period of time? What are you going to do? And I'm suddenly, in the process of, you know, I've become a grandfather, like you. Yes, congratulations. Yep.
Thank you.
And I've moved house, and I've done all these things. And I've had this conversation with my wife saying, it just feels a bit weird at the moment, and I feel a little bit disoriented by a number of things. Mm. But I'm focused also on the radio station and so on. But I keep asking myself, you've got 10 years left. What do you want to do? Because time is running out if you wanted to do something else. And you said that sort of, you know, that was that, part that, of
that's
how...
Absolutely the premise for the book is identifying what your best life looks like and then seeing whether your current life actually resembles that best life. I mean, you can be as detailed or as broad as you want for what your best life actually looks like. That's personal. But if you're in a position where what you think the best life that you could lead is and it doesn't look like that today, then what are the small changes that you can make to take you in that direction? Because the most important thing for most human beings is that we are moving in the right direction to where we want to be. We may never get there. It may not actually be what we think it is. Paradise at the end may not actually be that. You know, I've got up to the top of many mountains and realised that wasn't my mountain to climb. And then the way down is quite difficult again to go and find your own mountain. But you have to be moving in the right direction. And changing small things in your daily life routine and habits is absolute key to changing the moving that needle in the right direction. So at least you've got some hope that you're actually going towards what you think is your best life. Because if you don't, you're going to be just sat there in misery complaining about where you are and the fact that it's not your fault, it's everybody else's fault. You have to take control. I'm a bit brutal about this in the book, but it's on you. It is absolutely 100% on you. Oh, right. It's not on anybody else.
My fault. Wow.
It's your fault, yeah. This radio station is your fault.
Yeah, that's it. See, I know where I'm going and I know where I want to get to and I'm not sure how I get there.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking, now I've added in, because of my accountant saying you've only got 10 years left, I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute, was there anything else that I needed to do I might have forgotten about that I think, oh, we should have done that, but now it's too late.
Yeah. One thing we didn't talk about when you were talking about your retirement is my view on retirement.
Come on, let's have it.
As normal, it's not your straightforward...
Is this going to work?
yeah. I'm not going to retire.
You're not going to retire?
I'm not going to retire. I see the final destination of my life not being retirement. I see it as doing things that I want to do.
Yeah.
It just may be different to what I'm doing now. It may be less with regard to working activities. It may be more, I don't know. But I'm not putting a label on a time in my life where suddenly I'm not doing what the majority of people at my age are doing, which is working and then working for the weekend and then working again and,
like,
you know,
that
2 days of misery and then back to work, that sort of thing. So I'm not going to retire. I'm just going to do more things that I want to do.
See, I get that, and I really don't like when everything is like expected. Right, there you go, you're 67, you got to retire. Well, why? I'm still fit and healthy, why? Yeah. Why are you leading me to believe that is the right thing to do? It's almost like someone's put that in your head, that seed of thought. And the only way we can change things is if you chuck it up in the air and just say, right, okay, I want the best bits, and that's how I'm going to go forward. And I've always felt like that.
Yeah.
But because we're, this is going to take a deep level of conversation now. We're going deep, deep, deep. I was having a conversation with young kids earlier on, and we were saying about the problem is, just say, for instance, take bad language. Bad language, most of us, because we've grown up to be taught that, or we know that bad language is bad and it's not good, and all those naughty words, we hear them on the telly and we say, well, we wouldn't like our grandchildren talking like that, would we? But just say, for instance, if they said from tomorrow, they made a law from tomorrow that bad language, there's no such thing as swear words anymore. No such thing as swear words. In 30 years' time, it won't be such a problem. Now it'll be a problem. The only problem is because your mind has gone backwards and said, look, I'm made to believe that that's naughty and that's wrong. Yeah. Whereas in 30 years' time, it will just be the norm.
Yeah.
And I was looked at with some blank expressions. I said, I'll give you an example. Young kids okay, if you grew up from 2000, let's just say 2000.
Yeah, millennials.
If you're a millennial, you've grown up with mobile phones, you've grown up with computerisation, and we watch TV differently. So your mindset is totally different to ours. When we mention videos and vinyl, you look at us and go, what?
Yeah, what's a check?
Exactly, what is a check? So if you make the change now, it'll be drastic to some people, but in 20 years' time, it'll be brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a growth mindset, you know. And if you can actually educate children now to have the ultimate growth mindset, then you know there is no limit to what their futures can be. If we fix it and say you are going to do this and you have to tread this path, you know, if you tell an 8-year-old now that you will then go to high school, you will then get your, what are they, GCSEs now? It used to be O-levels, exactly. I'm done it already. Yeah. Then you've got A-levels. Then you're going to go to university. Then after university, you will get a career in a large business, and then you will retire at 65 and you will get a pension. And then those last 20, 30 years, you will be living off a small amount of money and not being able to survive the kind of life that you had previously. As an 8-year-old, you're going to go, oh, that doesn't sound much fun. I don't want to do that. So, you know what I mean? So why do we have these set? Why do we have these set parameters? I did my university degree when I was 35, married, two children, wife working nights, you know, with a full-time job. I was 35, yeah? Whereas most people do their degrees and that higher education when they're 18. So why does there have to be a set path for it? You do it in your own time, you do it to your own capabilities, and you do it when you want to do it. But the growth mindset has got to be something which people use to their ultimate advantage to create the best life for themselves, whatever that might be.
Okay, I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Good. I think you need it.
I do.
Honestly, I'm not joking. That's, you know, I know we have a little joke and a little bit of banter now together, but I actually think our conversation before we came on air, this book is for you. You know, I've written this for you, Ian.
Well,
I might even dedicate
you.
I haven't
thank
dedicated you.
You.
I've dedicated to somebody else.
But no, I'm intrigued, and I really am looking forward to when it comes out. I want to know, because I get distracted if I'm reading. I'm not a very good reader,
but I love
listening on audiobooks.
Yeah, you said that to me before, didn't you? And the last time I was in, you said, because we spoke about the book, and I remember it, because I've still got your face looking at me across the two microphones. Ian was going, you can have it on audiobooks. And I was going, yeah, I'll probably do that. And I was thinking, Matthew McConaughey, yeah, that'd be the good voice. And he's jumping up and down in front of me like a little, you know, like a little meerkat going, ooh, I'll do it. And then I felt bad. I didn't ask it. Because he has got, you know, and, you know, I'm talking to the audience now. Ian has got a very good voice for radio. Whereas
I thought you were talking about Matthew McConaughey.
No, well, he has, yeah, you know, yeah.
No, well, you should do it.
I can't.
No.
You said this before. Nobody wants to listen to my scratchy voice, do they?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. It'd be perfect. I always look. It's the first thing I look for. If someone's telling, I love autobiographies.
Yeah,
that's all I listen to. Yeah. But I always look. Is it done by the person that's wrote it? No, I don't want to listen to it.
Yeah, I'm with you. If you can hear the author's voice, it does make it easier to listen to, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does. Yeah. And I think I look forward to. I mean, that's hours and hours of recording, but I'm sure that, you know, you get that done with the help of someone. And this is probably it wasn't me offering to voice it; it was me offering to produce it.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, you're backtracking now. You wanted the gig,
so you are going to turn it into a.
I am. Yeah, but here is the nub of the problem. So, writing something down and getting it spell checked and grammarized is one thing. Me reading out what I've written and making it sound like I'm just saying it is another problem for me, because obviously reading I find very difficult. So it's going to be something where when I do presentations, I do PowerPoint presentations for health and safety and stuff in the construction industry, I sit there for maybe two nights before the presentation memorizing the slides.
Right.
So I memorize the slide so I don't have to read off the screen behind me. I've already got a picture in my head of what those words are, so I just need to flick behind just to remind myself, and then I can regurgitate what I've remembered.
Right. So if Matthew McConaughey is not available,
yep,
then I know someone that would do it for you.
Okay, who's that?
We'll talk about that.
You're asking for a friend, yeah.
Yeah. Look, we're running out of time, so just tell us when, how we can get hold of the book.
Well, it will be on Amazon and Waterstones and a couple of other outlets globally that you can purchase books on, but mainly sort of the Amazon type platforms. It should be out before Christmas, because I think, like I say, 15 days after tomorrow, it should be available once I've authorised it all. And then I've got a book launch sort of evening in January at Key Arts, and then sort of once that's all done, then it's all good to go. So yeah,
excellent, brilliant.
Sink or swim.
Sink or swim.
It's on you. Yeah, not a self-help book.
Yeah, it's on you. I think I like that. It's, yeah. It is. It's on you. Where you are now is down to you.
Down to you.
So if you've done all right and you feel comfortable, down to you. Pat on the back. If you haven't, it's your fault.
It's your fault. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
on you. Yeah. What did you call him? There's something in the book where there's a line and it says, "It's on you, sweetheart," or something patronising. Like that.
Suck it up, princess.
Suck it up, princess. That's it. It's on you. Suck it up, princess. That's a T-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sink. Cool swim. Yeah. Thanks for coming in. It's really good to see you.
My pleasure, as always, Ian.
Grandad.
Thank you.
And, we'll take a break. We'll come back with some Steve Harley. It's 12 minutes to one.